It's time for Sweet Home Cannabama, a show that'll answer all your questions, provide accurate information, and dispel the myths of CBD. You can participate and have your specific questions answered by emailing sweethomecannabama.com. And now for all things cannabis in Alabama, here's your host, Jennifer Boozer.
Welcome to the show, everybody. You're listening to Sweet Home Cannabama Radio right here at FM Talk 106.5. In Mobile, Alabama. We're broadcasting across the Gulf Coast, Florida, Mississippi, and, of course, Alabama. And we're also live streaming on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, X, LinkedIn. If you are watching online, share this with your friends. Hit that subscribe button. Help us keep the message going. I want to go ahead and say that I have an in-studio guest, which you guys know is rarely happens. This is Ryan. I'm going to get into who Ryan is in a minute. I want to say... happy Father's Day to everybody yesterday. And, you know, just like on Mother's Day, this thought crossed my mind. If you have lost your dad like me, or you're a dad who has lost a child, or you never had a dad, and Father's Day is painful and there's a lot of grief, I encourage you to go back to our episode from 2 weeks ago with Dr. Lakeisha, where we talked about grief and coping with cannabis on our YouTube channel. And, I ever since we did the episode, I think it has so much value. Like we talked about, loss is loss and pain is pain, and a lot of effects in the brain and the body from that. And so if you're looking for guidance, struggling with sleep, with pain, with racing thoughts or brain fog, all the things that derail us when we're in those sad moments, you know, I just experienced my yearly dose of that when my son's birthday came and went. You know, he should be 23 years old. And, you know, yesterday I just kept thinking, I miss my dad so much. And I know so many people that have lost their dads recently. And again, you know, my son's father, I'm sure, feels the pain of that. He's lost his dad and our son. And so if you're struggling with grief, I encourage you to reach out to people around you and check out that episode with Dr. Lakeisha. It has so much value. And that's why we do these shows, so that those can be out there on the record and you can use them and share them with other people who haven't heard about the benefits of hemp and cannabis. As I said, happy Father's Day, especially to my sweetheart, Shane. He is a great dad and stepdad, and I appreciate you, honey. Love you. So I want to introduce Ryan. I'm going to read this little bio. Today on Sweet Home Cannabama, we're talking with someone who is right on the front lines of America's industrial hemp revival, Ryan Doherty, founder and managing member of CanAbsorb, a Virginia-based company turning U.S.-grown hemp fiber into high-performance acoustic panels. Ryan has spent nearly a decade working across the hemp fiber supply chain, from processing innovation to market development, and he's known nationwide for pushing this industry toward real, scalable, American-made materials. Before launching CanAbsorb, he has worked to build trust and consistency in the fiber market as VP of Sales and Business Development at Tiger Fiber Hemp Company, and does so to this day as well. CanAbsorb is part of a new generation of U.S. manufacturers proving that hemp fiber isn't just a crop. It's a sustainable building material, a sound control solution, and a real economic opportunity for farmers and rural communities. And he's here to break down what he does, what's happening, why it matters, and what's at stake for American farmers, processors, and companies just like his, CanAbsorb. Welcome to the show.
Stoked to be here. Thank you very much.
Pull that microphone closer to your mouth for me so we can hear your sweet voice. let's get into it. You know, you have an interesting history. We just in the last 30 minutes, I learned so much about you. But tell us a little bit about your background and how you ended up involved in the industrial hemp space.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate it. And thanks for bringing light and incitement to this and excitement to this this plant and all of its uses.
Yes.
I got really fortunate. Timing is everything when trying to bring things together. And I was in the right place at the right time with the laws being available to pursue this, because mm-hmm. people have been trying to bring hemp to, you know, the forefront of people's attention or new material applications, but the laws have been very restrictive.
So right.
I was in university at the same time as the 2014 Farm Bill had passed, and I was at a university that was cultivating hemp mm-hmm. and doing a research program around hemp. So I had, previous to that, been aware of it, and you know, I had grown up mostly in Northern Virginia, so I got to go on field trips to places like Mount Vernon and Monticello and see old hemp fiber processing equipment and learn about our naval and our maritime history of using hemp fiber and how important it was as a major cash crop and being used as a form of taxing by the Virginia House of Burgesses, all these old governments and systems in place.
Yeah.
And I actually grew up right down the street from a big old building called the U.S. Pentagon, which is built on a piece of land that used to be called Arlington Farms, and it's where the government actually grew their trial plots for many years of hemp. This guy named Leister Dewey back in 1913 did the USDA yearbook all about hemp, and we kind of see a lot of changes coming after that of mm-hmm. the other industries saying, whoa, we got this an issue on the horizon to address. But that is, I was in a place that it was prevalent and historically relevant, and then at the university at the right time, and then with the laws moving the way they did. So that was that combined with my natural interest in healthier materials and alternative ways of making the things that we use kind of led to the culmination of being able to pursue this, and that's what I've been doing for a little over a decade now.
That's crazy, and you're just a little younger than me, 16 years. But when I was in high school, and right after high school, actually, in Louisiana, and I had moved back to New Orleans, and I was working at a record store.
Oh, yeah.
And they sold hemp, like, necklaces and stuff, mm-hmm. and that was, like, the most radical thing you could have is, it's made from hemp, you know, like this is so controversial. But no idea until I was 40 years old,
mm-hmm.
you know, which it's amazing for you to have that experience so young. It's just like my son over here in the corner, you know, when he was turning 18, 19, I was starting the business. It was 2018 Farm Bill.
Mm-hmm.
And he got to sort of grow up in that environment, and it's normal. You know, and it was not normal for us.
Right.
And, you know, most of the people that I end up having to teach the most are people my age and older.
Yeah.
You know, it was just, it was all bad. Cannabis, hemp, whatever you want to call it, it was all bad all the time. We had the DARE program and the war on drugs, you know. And I was in elementary school when Ronald Reagan was president. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a totally different time now and a totally different experience. But you were really at the right place in the right time, the right state, the right school, and had already gained so much of that information. That's wild. You are a lucky, lucky dude.
That's when things strike, when luck meets preparation.
I'm telling you. Happen. Lucky for me, nobody in Alabama had the wherewithal to do anything with it yet, and I got in early and helped blaze that trail. And I will, you know, no matter what, they can't take that from me, and I'm really excited to be able to do this. You know, we talk about the industrial applications a lot. I've had a few hempcrete guys on.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about, you know, all of the different uses, but we've never had anybody come on specifically to talk about fiber.
Right.
Because it is so scarce. You know, there's so few people doing it. So that's why when I saw your ad on Facebook or your post on Facebook, never heard of the company, never heard of you. You know all my friends. Never heard of you. And I'm like, what is happening? That is so cool. So I wanted to have you on the show, and I'm so glad that you're here. You know, you can see behind me, because we're about to go to break, but you can see behind me, and every week, these black panels, you know, and they're foam. And that people use what? Wool? You said wool. They use foam. They use
petrochemical, you know.
It's all like sorts of chemically processed. Well, fiberglass, that's just itchy. Ooh, I feel itchy talking about it.
Yes.
You know, for soundproofing in so many different places. Radio and TV studios, you know, podcast studios. Any place where people need soundproofing. And we're going to talk about the natural hemp fiber alternative for that. When we come back from the break, We're going to get into the details of how it's grown, what makes it different from the hemp that we usually are talking about, and what the word hemp really means. You know, we know that it's used as a legal term to distinguish the low THC consumable market from the high THC consumable market. But what hemp really is what we're going to get into tonight. And this guy is a wealth of knowledge. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Sweet Home Cannabama. Now with all the information you want about CBD, here's your host, Jennifer Boozer.
Welcome back, everybody, to Sweet Home Cannabama. Tonight we have Ryan Doherty from CanAbsorb all the way from Virginia in studio tonight. I'm tickled pink because very rarely do we have anybody outside of Alabama that gets to come and be in the studio. And most of the time when we do, it's like somebody from Louisiana or Florida close by. So this guy's been traveling all over the Southeast for the last several days, and he basically worked us into his schedule, and I'm so excited because later on in the show, we're going to do a little show and tell and show you some of the products that can be made from this plant that people have no idea about, and it's really, really cool, and things that we have talked about that we've never seen before. So let's get into it. Tell us about you mentioned to me in the lobby that you are a part of the U.S. Hemp Building Association. Is there any other organizations that you're working with?
At this moment, and we work with in conjunction with the National Hemp Association and the National Industrial Hemp Coalition and things like mm-hmm. groups that are looking to develop foreign markets and promote the hemp industry as a whole. But right now I'm just involved directly on the board of the U.S. Hemp Building Association, and where we're trying to spread the information and build the networks for natural builders that are using hemp materials in their construction
right,
projects.
Right, and you guys, that there's no concern or connection whatsoever to consumable products. You guys are just focused on the truly industrial applications of the hemp plant.
Exactly.
Okay, so you started out with Tiger Hemp, right?
Yep, Tiger Fiber, yep.
What do they do?
Well, I started out with a lot of I've been
Well, that's who you're currently are working with, and
that's right.
Who you were with when you decided to start your own company.
That's right. Yeah, and it's called Tiger Fiber because they're out of Missouri, and the CEO and founder is a graduate of Mizzou. He's a Tiger.
All right. And we have Tigers here. They're called Auburn Tigers.
That's right. Yeah, no, but yes, that is where they got going on the banks of the Mississippi up there, and they've had a processing facility that produces the fiber that I use for my product and the herd that we've sent to many, many building projects, and a lot of it goes to chicken coops and animal cages like rabbits and hamsters and gerbils. So we use it as a super absorbent, high-performing natural bedding material.
Yes, animal bedding, yes.
So that's we do a lot of that. We're hoping to keep building stable markets. You know, I didn't get into hemp and think I'd be super passionate about animal bedding, but we want really stable markets so that we can provide that stability into the supply chain.
Pardon the pun, but you can't put all your eggs in one basket.
Absolutely. So that's.
But if you do, make it a hemp bedding basket.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can use it for decoration.
You can make the basket itself.
Yes. But yeah, that's where we've been really working on stabilizing the demand and giving people consistent materials that mm-hmm. are clean and have specifications around them so they know what to expect. Cause that's one of the issues with any natural material is mm-hmm. natural inconsistencies.
Right.
And so people have come to not really maybe trust, or they've gone to these other petro or poly type materials because they know what they're going to get
every time.
It's
just a clone of everything being the same. It's mm-hmm. I think that's similar to with overcoming hurdles on the consumable side, that
absolutely.
Every plant is different, every strain is different, every batch will be different, mm-hmm. but we are all different. And that's why we need, we might need a different material in the humid, the climate that we're in with the humidity as compared to the desert in Phoenix, mm-hmm. And those things matter. But yes, natural inconsistencies are because they're not all supposed to be the same.
Absolutely.
And with pharmaceuticals, it's all petroleum based and it all is exactly the same. And then they say, take two and call me in the morning, mm-hmm. no matter who you are or what's wrong with you. And I think that's that overlap of what we've been brainwashed to believe, that if it isn't flawless and exactly replicated, that it can't be as good or as effective, when what we really need is the inconsistencies.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're trying to make it as similar as possible.
Well, of course. We don't need holes in it.
But yes.
let's embrace the beauty of the fact that this isn't a smooth surface, but look at it. It's a wonder.
I agree.
When you open your mind to it.
That organic, trees are
yes,
beautiful.
That's right. No two trees are the same. Mm-hmm. Why do we believe that everything has to be the same?
Exactly.
So what problem were you trying to solve when you founded CanAbsorb?
Yeah, well, we wanted to find a consistent offtake market for our fiber material. Here in the United States, we do not procure things like yarns and textiles at a large scale like we used to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been really tough to reactivate that woven side of the fiber market. So we focused our energy on producing what we call non-wovens, so anything that you're not making a yarn out of first, essentially.
Right.
And so that we looked at the kind of the best things that hemp does.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a hollow fiber. And it's one of its main applications in Europe is for automotive components. And they really like it because it blocks the noise. You get a real quiet ride when they make the interior door paneling and stuff from the hemp fiber.
Yes, I have heard that.
And so that's we saw that as one of its highest performance aspects. And that's what really people want to see. People love the hemp material, but they want to see products that really compete, that aren't mm-hmm. just made out of hemp, and it's kind of a token natural product because it's got this material in it. They want to, even people that buy hemp clothing and stuff, they want to buy it for the
Yeah, the cool factor only gets you so far.
That's
it needs to be effective.
It's got
to
work.
Efficient, and you need to have a stable supply of it, like you were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess diversifying what you're making out of those same fibers gives you that stability. Again, not putting all your eggs in one basket.
Absolutely. And we can make a whole lot of other products that are pretty similar to this. We do things like nesting pads or other sorts of thinner insulation they use for packaging or all sorts of other uses. But this is kind of a great market to break into.
Yeah.
Also, because the demographic that's interested in this product happens to have an interest in hemp. We're looking at musicians and
people
at their gaming studios.
Music and cannabis in all forms go hand in hand.
And they like natural products.
I've seen what do you call them? Amps?
Mm-hmm.
Guitar amps? I've seen guitars.
Absolutely.
I've seen all sorts of things made out of some form of the hemp plant.
Certainly.
At expos and stuff like that. Like the Southern Hemp Expo, which is an extension of NOCO,
right.
And it's fascinating to me, what I've seen, and I know that what I've seen is only a small part of what's possible,
absolutely.
And it's very exciting to get to see it in person. How has your time with Tiger Fiber shaped your understanding of the market? Because you started out with someone else's company that does something on a much bigger scale than what you're doing, but then you've got this offshoot for yourself with the panels to give that extra product. What did you learn that was the most valuable while you were with Tiger Fiber? Since you have been with them, you are still currently with them. Sorry.
No, I
didn't mean to imply you're not anymore.
No, all good. There's we do a lot of our own education and awareness. And, Missouri's got a mature medical and recreational market.
Yes, they do.
So we do our very best to really make it clear the difference between the crops, and it's much more understood in places like that where they
mm-hmm.
have fully accessible markets of the fiber and of the
right.
There's less confusion up there,
right.
And we've come up with lots of great metaphors for explaining kind of how different these very, very almost completely different industries. They really there are like almost three or four different industries within the cannabis realm.
Right.
There's the consumable seed, which people...
Right, the food products.
Yeah, the
like
the
seed
oils.
And hemp parts and the microgreens and
mm-hmm.
and animal feed and all that.
Exactly.
That's a food product. And then you've got the consumable on the medicinal product supplement side.
Precisely.
CBD, THC, and all the other things. And then what you guys do is completely on the other side of the planet from that.
And it's almost, I always equate it to like growing trees. Because, you know, you don't think of a food that really comes off of your pine or your oak. You know,
right.
That's, people aren't growing those to consume anything off of it. You know, those trees are, it's like a timber industry. It's cut just.
But there are trees that make apples and oranges and peaches and things
we,
like
but we
that.
Don't use those.
Right. It's different
those,
types
those
of trees.
Those trunks don't get turned into furniture.
That's
they'd
right.
be very, very crappy
they
furniture.
They take the fruit off and let the tree keep going.
And that's exactly what happens. People kind of get a little confused thinking that all these products come from one plant.
Right. That you take the bud off and then you take the leaves off and then you grind this up and peel. No, it's different varieties.
They're cultivated completely differently. Differently in the field. I mean, what our type of farming is very much more similar to like hay farming.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, broadcast spread or it's drilled, and then we're harvesting it with a sickle bar. It's baled like a bale of hay,
mm-hmm.
and so it's all about pulling stalks out of the field. We're just collecting that fiber and herd material. Nothing else is coming out of the field, so it's really like growing for timber. And that's why you hear these comparisons of how much material can be produced and how, but you know, and I don't mean to take away from any other aspect of the plant, but we do see kind of a crossing over of the benefits of hemp, which I can see to the consumer being a little confusing or hard to follow.
Absolutely.
Where what everything comes from. But what we grow looks, and people that walk into the field say, oh, is this hemp or is this bamboo or is this switchgrass? Because it looks a lot more, as it grows at that high density and so fast and so tall, the leaves at the bottom of the plant typically will fall. And so you're left with these super slender, minimal lateral branching, just straight stalks.
And I've been in consumable hemp fields where the plants are, you know, 4 foot around and about 6 feet tall, and there's big old cola flowers on the top, and, you know, it doesn't look like, it's not 12 to 15 feet tall like a fiber plant would be, and you're right, those do look a lot like bamboo, because there's such a sparse amount of those leaves,
absolutely.
You know?
They kind of, as they lose their access to sunlight, and another thing, that's what makes hemp so competitive in the field when you're growing for the fiber compared to when you're growing for the flower. The flower, you really need to, almost like cotton, you're tending to it, and you're around. It's more of a horticultural practice.
Right.
But fiber hemp is known as the frontier fiber. It used to clear land.
Mm-hmm.
It's so robust that it doesn't require heavy use of pesticides or herbicides.
Right.
It's got this big broad leaf that when planted at that density, you're getting up to a million plants an acre. And that's where all those stats come from. And that's where the benefits, you know, the helping out the soil and
that
all
is
those
very
types of
different
things.
Because on a consumable farm, those plants are going to be a few feet apart.
That's right.
Because they have to have room to spread out and get all the sunshine. That sounds like it's much more densely populated seed. Yeah.
And we rely on that, them chasing the sunlight up.
So right.
When they're all dense like that. In fact, you could grow two different varieties, a very similar variety, very different ways, and you'll get a very different result from the plant. It's almost like people, depending where they grow up. And
right. Environment and climate and... Well, yeah, I mean, a couple more days or less days of sunshine, it totally changes the plant.
Big time.
When we come back from the break, more with Hemp Fiber and Ryan Doherty from Canazorb. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Sweet Home Canabama. Now with all the information you want about CBD, here's your host, Jennifer Boozer.
Welcome back, everybody, to the second half of Sweet Home Canabama Radio right here at FM Talk 106.5. We are live streaming from YouTube and all the socials. We're talking tonight with Ryan Doherty, who owns CanAbsorb, and he works for Tiger Fiber Hemp in Missouri as well. And so the panels, let's talk about the panels for a minute, because we were talking about these panels here are foam and made with all these chemicals, wool, and fiberglass and all of those things that are not ideal.
Mm-hmm.
And these, how does the performance of those, you know, you said it was a hollow fiber.
That's right.
And that's what helps the sound absorption?
Greatly, yeah. So if the fiber looks kind of like a straw, if you looked at it.
Yeah.
It's got, you know, a gap in the middle. And what we do is we use a special machine that actually entangles all these fibers in a special type of matrix. And what we're trying to do is have the sound kind of get lost in there.
Yeah.
Like when you're in a forest and you can't hear the road anymore once you start a hike.
Right.
It's because the sound can only transfer and move so far.
It can move in a straight line, and we're not giving it a straight path.
Exactly. So
what makes sense.
When you want to, in terms of acoustic paneling, what people really look for is two things mainly that they're comparing it to other materials or products out there, and that's how well it reduces noise. They have a test called a noise reduction coefficient, and they test it at different decibels, and they take an average of that, and it's a 0 to 1 score. And panels like these, usually, that's why they put those angled cuts in it and stuff like that.
Yeah, I've always wondered why they have ridges, or sometimes they look like egg crate.
It's to get it to the sound to bounce in there.
Ah, so, this is the natural.
Well, we don't have to do anything to this because we have so much that they have air pockets and things in there that are trying to diffuse the noise, but we have this natural matrix of fibers where the noise gets lost in there. So we're able to get a much better NRC out of this product than they can ever get. So this score is a 1. The highest you can get. And the other thing that we do, typically hemp fiber would be flammable, but we treat this material with an all-natural fire retardant so that it has a Class A fire rating as well.
Wow.
So this thing is has no flame spread, so it's safe and it's high performing. And those are kind of the two things. And then in order, we've talked to a lot of folks, gotten a lot of feedback from noise, studio builder, all this kind of stuff. And that's kind of the first things that they need to tell the customer. It's going to be safe. It's going to be effective.
Right. I imagine that would melt if you put a flame to it.
It will. But they probably have done something to make it not combust.
Yeah.
And below, it's called a flame spread. So it's still will smolder and stuff, but it won't light up.
Okay.
And burn other things around.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah. I have no idea about sound proofing and paneling, so sorry if some of my questions are weird.
Well, no, the biggest materials out there that people use typically are fiberglass, which is made out of melted spine, and these materials that they've synthetically derived are all trying to mimic what long,
that
thin
does.
Cellulose fibers do naturally. So we're we're pulling cellulose out of the ground, like wizards, like some magical feet. And these guys are having to melt rocks with high energy.
Right. Go and jump through all those hoops.
Yeah. Just to get what nature can provide us.
I mean, I don't even want to know what the process of melting rocks is like in order to make fiberglass.
Well, it's proprietary, so don't worry.
Well, I'm sure it sounds hot.
No, it is. It's a big brand called Rockwell. Usually when they move into a neighborhood, people aren't pleased.
Yeah.
Because they do use a lot of energy and they have,
Again, making this a superior product because you just throw the seed out, let it grow, take it down, do, and there you go.
Absolutely.
And it's got the highest rating, which means it performs as well or better than these other alternatives, and it's safer.
Yes. It can absorb.
It can absorb. I see where you went there. Well, and two, I know that I did a little reading and foam and things like that can off-gas, chemicals and things to the room. So you can imagine with all the panels, some places I've seen are wall-to-wall.
Yep.
That's a lot of chemicals in there.
Yep. When you get in those new, brand new cars, you got that new car smell. It's probably not the best.
Yeah, probably not.
Creating that scent for you.
Smells like money.
Yeah, that to some.
And that's why they're better though, is, for indoor air quality. We talk a lot about the sort of natural filtration of air with hempcrete in building, but this is another way that it helps filter the air and make it cleaner and raise the air quality. And so many people have allergies, their children have allergies, and it's like, when you're shut up in the house, dust is skin and all the creepy things.
We spend a lot more time indoors, and we should be considering what we're making, all the things we surround ourselves with. People got really into eating healthy, putting things in their bodies that are good, and then there's a new interest in what we're putting on our bodies.
Right.
It's turned out we're absorbing these polyesters and things into our skin.
Microplastics is a huge topic.
Absolutely. And now we need to look at what we're building our built environment that's all around us that we're spending more time in. So.
Well, right. You can eat right. You can drink the right amount of water. You can you can wear the right type of material on your body, but if you're breathing it in everywhere you go,
absolutely.
I tell people all the time, you may not drink tap water, but you shower.
Absolutely.
You're inhaling the steam, and that steam has chlorine and fluoride and all the other nastiness. So you're getting it one way or another.
That's the fact.
It's crazy. The first time I heard about the amount of pesticides it takes to maintain cotton farms compared to hemp, I was at a hemp convention in Las Vegas, and I leaned over to my husband, and I was like, you think anybody else in here wants to immediately just strip?
Yes.
Like, this is creeping me out.
It is a...
You don't think about it.
Right. Well, I do.
Well, you know, like you just said, you spend all your time talking about this. So do I. But people who are teachers and doctors and bus drivers and whatever they are, they think about their line of work.
Absolutely.
And then their home and their family's needs. They don't have time to consider all these things. That's how the government and these corporations have gotten us to this point.
Absolutely.
Because nobody has time to research every stitch of material, every cleaning product, every beauty product. I mean, the cadmium and lipstick.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wearing lipstick knowing. And that's another thing, you know, social norms. It's like, where does it end? You know, no matter how you try to keep you and your family clean and safe, everything is trying to kill you.
It feels that way.
Or make you sick.
Yeah, but we have the option and the possibility.
We do. That's why these topics are so important.
That's right,
and people like you are so important.
I appreciate it.
What does the U.S. hemp fiber landscape look like today?
It's a risky endeavor still to this day.
And let me stop you there and say risk starts with the fact that because it's hemp,
yes,
the banking, the ability to get traditional loans and lines of credit applies, even if you're not making a consumable product.
Absolutely.
You say the word hemp, and they say, nope, see you later. It took me forever to find somebody to give me a checking account.
Right.
And, every major and minor bank I could find, and I got a state bank that embraced me.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very hard to get your own financing, and then you're dependent on either just winging it or finding investors who get the concept.
Absolutely.
So the risk starts there. There's a lot of, I don't know about in the industrial side, but crop insurance and things like that, not a thing.
Right. Yeah, no. So we are in a true American entrepreneurial endeavor with not much assistance or guidance. And
right.
So that's what attracted me to it.
Is right.
It's like exploring.
Rebel with a cause kind of thing. I feel you. That's, we're kindred spirits on
that. But the thing that, the real, on the fiber side, the thing that's been, and it's kind of, it's got a colored story to it because there's been attempts to build different types of processing technologies. But really, to this day, there is no decided upon or openly for sale large fiber
processing systems.
Right.
There's not a John Deere tractor version for hemp processing machinery.
Right.
And things like that.
Exactly.
It just doesn't exist.
Yeah, so almost all the processors out there have to construct or imagine their own style of processing.
Kind of piece it together.
And not only that, a lot of the old style of processing was really designed for the fiber that we needed for ropes and for clothing. And that's not really what we're doing. And there's never really been a modern day of hemp processing where we collect all this herd material. Herd is the inner woody core of the hemp stock. It's like the wood under the bark. They call hemp is a bast fiber.
Mm-hmm.
So the hemp fiber grows like a bark on the outside of the tree.
Mm-hmm.
And that process of separating that outer fiber from the inner woody core is pretty complicated at scale. And people are still looking. And there is, I mean, we're going to keep improving and keep optimizing. But we have been at this, you know.
Well, and you're talking about a plant that's this big around on a good day, you know, very skinny. It's not like a tree. Like I was watching a video where they were harvesting cork.
Mm-hmm.
They just know the depth that they can cut into that bark and peel it off, and the tree stays there and regrows its bark. But we're talking about sticks, like reeds almost.
Well, everything from the thickness of a pencil all the way up to a baseball bat.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people that set up these processing machinery systems, they break and they light on fire and people fall inside of them.
Oh, no.
But it's that
Why
exciting.
Are we left?
No, people aren't falling inside of them.
People
it's
get not
close.
Quite a wood chipper.
People scratch their knuckles on them.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. It's dangerous.
You might lose a finger.
No, but it is, it's a very, just like farming. It's a risky endeavor.
Right.
And then you're also dealing with farmers. So you got to have a lot of confidence to go tell somebody else to.
Well, right. And that's another thing. You know, a lot of this, we want our farmers that are, especially small farms, mm-hmm. not corporate farms. We want these small farmers, even in Alabama. That's my dream, is to have this revive the farming industry in Alabama. We are a farming state.
Mm-hmm.
But these guys have grown corn and cotton and watermelons and peas and, you know, peaches and, you know, all those food items. And they don't know. How do you teach a peanut farmer who learned from his daddy, mm-hmm. how to transition those skills and learn all about this plant and all the vast possibilities, the differences?
Right.
You know, and one of the things that always stumps me is if you've been growing a crop that required a lot of pesticides and fertilizers, how can you come back after that and then plant hemp on the consumable side anyway?
Certainly.
That's going to suck all that up out of the dirt because of the bioremediation factor that hemp has.
And it does. That's why you got to be really careful with where.
And
all these
farmers,
are coming from.
I mean, who's teaching them? We need a cultivation school, someplace people can go and learn how to grow it hydroponically, how to grow it indoors, how to grow it outdoors for whatever purposes, greenhouses, and then all of these. Because there are experts. There are people like you who live and breathe this, who are connected with companies that this is all that they do.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to get those people all in one place to teach other people who want to and have no idea where to start. You know, I mean, that's a pretty good idea if you ask me. When we come back from the break, we're going to finish up the show with Brian Doherty. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Sweet Home Canabama. Now with all the information you want about CBD, here's your host, Jennifer Boozer.
Welcome back, everybody. We've been talking about hemp fiber processing and the industrial application of the plant that we talk about every week. And Ryan, before the break, you know, I mentioned we were talking about the risk that comes with growing hemp. But let's talk more, and we didn't get to finish that. Let's talk more about the reward.
Absolutely.
You know, what are the upside for a farmer to get into this, you know, and then after that, can a farm in the middle of Alabama grow hemp for fiber and then sell that fiber to a company like Tiger or you mm-hmm. to process into products where they're just strictly the grower?
Absolutely. That's how we work it up in the Midwest. You know, unfortunately, we're surrounded by 1 million acres of farmland, or lots of mm-hmm. arable acreage right there, and we're not running out of ability or land to grow. But that the hemp that we use is grown very similar to hay. Or another, like a specialty hay. We're planting it with all traditional large-scale agricultural equipment like broadcast spreaders or seed drills. It's being harvested with a sickle bar, and it's being baled with a traditional baler, and that's what comes to our facility. But the thing about the hemp fiber side, like in any of the hemp space, is that there is no base price. There's no futures trading, so everything has to be... You know, we develop
the market
first.
It's not on the stock market like corn and soy.
No. So there's no stable market price. There's no government buyback programs. We have to develop the market, and then we have to pick the right equipment to make the kind of materials we need for the markets we've developed, and then we have to communicate to the farmer how we need the hemp grown so that we can take that material all the way through the supply chain.
Right.
And so there's been instances where, you know, a processor gets set up and they maybe grow a little more hemp than they know what to do with. And unfortunately, hemp fiber is very heavy, you know, when it's rolled in a bale. And so you want to find a close proximity processor.
Right, the shipping costs.
Yeah, so you want to move it only so far, because then once it gets made into a finished product, then it has to get moved to the consumer. And so that's the kind of the why originally hemp was so viewed so dangerous, you know, because it does get grown, processed, and used often in a very regional location. That's why it's great for micro, you know, circular supply chains.
Right.
A great material to bring to an island nation or
an integrated facility. Like we know about that on the consumable side, but in an integrated fiber facility where you would grow the plants and then process them and all that in the same place.
Yeah, it's almost got to be. Right now it has to be vertically integrated. You got to have, because there is not a huge market space. There are companies that are using the hemp materials here and there, but we're really pioneering building out our own markets to create that stability in the demand, and then we can provide that stability to the farmers in the form of contracts. But you don't want to just grow fiber hemp without a really firm understanding and a contract with a processor.
You need to know what's going to happen once you do pull it out of the ground. Mm-hmm. Where is it going to go? Because if you don't have that set up, then there's no point. You can't make any money off of it.
Unless you want to build a processing machine and get into this good
Hopefully some of the few that have figured it out, who have either invented a new machine or hobbled together something that works, mm-hmm. would be able to someday soon replicate that so that other people could say, hey, I want to be able to do what you're doing, and here's my money. Yeah. And get me a machine.
It's really similar. I mean, as far as industry comparison, the cotton industry is very similar to hemp.
Imagine.
The cotton gin.
Yeah.
The word gin is short for engine, mm-hmm. and it's what runs the cotton industry.
Yes, we learn about cotton gins down here in school history.
Well, that's what's holding the hemp industry back. We don't have a hemp gin. There is no – that's what – that the cotton gin is the one that – tells the farmer how much gets made and tells the producers how much they're getting to put into blue jeans and T-shirts.
If anybody listening has a ton of money they were looking to invest into something like that, I could probably connect you with people like Ryan who know what needs to be done and make that happen.
Well, that's what we've been doing for the last almost 10 years. We've been working on building that new.
Yeah.
And that's what we run up in St. Louis. It looks like nothing else around the world.
I've seen
processing equipment. We do things crazy here in America. We got a big backyard called Texas. Yeah. We got equipment everywhere. We can make anything here. And we just need a few things like the government to not be in our way.
Yeah, and interstate commerce, too. You know, that's a good thing on the plus side. For anything, as long as you're not talking about consumables.
Mm-hmm.
But for these products, interstate commerce is a huge help.
Yeah, we can move.
Because even if there are only 5 processors or 10 processors in the country, being able to go from state to state fluidly.
Absolutely.
You know, in Europe, you got to go from country to country.
Certainly.
And every country is its own thing. So I think that's one of the beautiful things about being able to do this in America is that we do have the ability to roam from state to state basically unbothered.
Absolutely. And hemp used to be it was the largest cash crop in the United States for many years.
Yeah, couldn't you pay your taxes with it back in the 1700s?
Certain people like the Virginia House of Burgesses.
Like Virginia, yes.
Yeah. Our U.S. government, the modern day, they haven't been. But yeah, like you were talking about earlier, we did bring it back briefly during war times. You know,
mm-hmm.
When we need
World War II.
Or when a country needs materials, they often turn to hemp because the market's stipulations come out when you're in a time of desperate need for resources, and it's the ultimate resource. You know, it can produce tons of material on a single acre in a fraction of the time of other materials. It helps the soil. It uses minimal resources to procure these materials. So it is something that really we need to bring our focus back on to people buying, because that's really what's going to drive this is people putting acoustic panels in their homes and their studios.
Okay, so this may sound super, TMZ of me, but have you seen the brouhaha about Zac Efron?
Absolutely.
Building in the jungle in Australia. He's building a house with hempcrete and fiber and all these different things in this like natural habitat for himself. I think he's spending like $2.5 million on it.
Yeah.
Why in Australia is what I want to know.
Australia's got a really
I know they do have
scene.
The hempcrete.
Yeah, absolutely.
I watch their videos all the time and see, and I've through the National Industrial Hemp Coalition, I've talked to some of the Australian farmers.
Right.
And they got it going on over there. We could take a page from their book with the industrial applications.
I go on call. They still need a big machine.
Yeah, of course.
They're calling America, say, hey, you guys got a big machine.
Right.
World counts
somebody
on
who likes
machines.
Making big machines, call us.
But yeah, no, it's what's missing on a large scale.
Well, that's the logjam, you said. You know, the biggest hurdle is that growing it is one thing.
Yeah.
But processing it is really where the slowdown and the confusion and where you can really have a breakdown in creating a more stable supply, growing
Absolutely.
The number of people growing and processing it, Because you're right. If you don't know what you're going to do with it once it's done, then what's the point?
Yeah. It's the processor who stimulates the – they write the contracts to the farmers. They write the the POs to the people who want to buy it. And it's really – we're vertically integrating and coming up with our own products, so we have transparency into that market, and we can grow it ourselves. We're not going to wait for people to say –
Right. No.
Hey, we'll use it.
That's how I would do it.
So that's what we're – and there's other simple applications for the herd. Like we sell a whole lot of it for animal husbandry products, like the animal bedding, and that's surging in interest. You know, we could have a dozen plus processing facilities just producing the herd for the animal bedding, but we need unique applications for the fiber. We're using this for other stuff, like I said, for fillers, for pillows, and for all natural dog toys that don't want polyfill in it. You know, you don't want your dog eating polyester plastic fibers out of their chew toy. But that is we're creating the markets that will then create the demand for more systems. I want to get out there and build more fiber processing systems.
Right. I think that's probably what we need is people who can go to other places and say, you want to do this? Let me show you how to do it.
Exactly.
Step to step to step. And just, you know, you could spend all your time doing consulting.
Well,
you know, walking people through the process. And again, there needs to be some sort of mainstream education on this, because there are now a few programs in universities around cannabis, but it's all on the medicinal and consumable side.
Right.
I don't see anybody in the university level. You know, Alabama A&M just had a workshop with Hempcrete a few months ago, and that I was thrilled to see that. We need to be doing that on, you know, a much more often and much more broadly. Because, like you say, it comes down to people not knowing what to do or what they're really working with and its value, and I think that that's important. How, before we run out of time, how can we find more information about CanAbsorb and Tiger Fiber?
Yeah, the CanAbsorb is at CanAbsorb. It's a cannabis absorber panel, so, and it can absorb the
sound. CanAbsorb.com,
and then it's on Instagram at can.absorb, and then Tiger Fiber is at tigerfiberhemp.com, and we're in St. Louis, Missouri, processing, growing and processing, and one of the messages that I would just leave to the open public is that it really is. We live in a consumer-driven economy.
Yeah.
It's what you guys buy. We vote with our dollar today.
That's right. That's right. And if you want to have a hempcrete house or hemp fiber panel in your – I know tons of people in the music industry. Everybody ought to be using this stuff.
Let's get it to them.
You know, the best quality and the safest, and it's going to support American farmers. Thank you so much, Ryan. This has been so fun. I think we could probably have talked for hours, and we'll definitely – we're definitely going to have you back, because I want to pick your brain about history. Thanks, guys, for being with us. Join us next week for Papa Snoop and Dr. Dana. We're going to continue our summer series, Back to Basics. God bless you, and God bless American hemp. Good night.